Okay, so we'll begin.
Thank you, Lungpo.
Yes, first of all, just to welcome everyone. As was said, and is a huge presence in everybody's mind, just that. Yeah, the tensions and difficulty that are taking place in the society, in Israel, in society, in the world, yeah, it's very, very real, and it's also something to be acknowledged or recognized that, say, sir, for each one of you, that showing up on an event like this and making the effort to meditate and to reflect on the teachings of the Lord Buddha, this is something extremely special, and not to be downplayed or underestimated as to its value and its usefulness. So just to pay attention to that and to acknowledge that, because it's the Buddha never really said that samsara was ever going to be satisfactory and a safe place, but there's some points in time and some points in history that are more chaotic than others. So but I think it's not that the Buddha didn't experience the difficulties of the political and social strife. He didn't grow up in a time of great peace either. So it's something to and his but still there is this universal teaching and a universal kind of desire, wish, yearning for peace. And so it's something that to be able to acknowledge and recognize and to pay attention to, because it's easy for the 24-hour news cycles to just be pounding away at one, and to be able to turn attention to the heart and see, well, what is it that really is a refuge, and what is it that is really a place of peace and tranquility within myself. So anyway, those are some beginning reflections, just to acknowledge and to greet everyone, to welcome everyone. Yeah. And if we could begin by sitting quietly. Roy has mentioned that you usually break it up with a begin with a meditation, have a Dhamma talk, and open it up for questions. So I'm happy to follow that format, and we can begin with a meditation. People can sit comfortably, and yeah, set whether one is sitting on the floor, sitting in a chair, whatever one is available to one in terms of a posture, just to try to be as present as possible. The teachings of the Buddha are so much grounded in mindfulness, but it's important to not make mindfulness just a conceptual or intellectual pursuit. Pay attention to how to embody mindfulness, to bring mindfulness into a very present moment attention and alertness and presence. It's not necessarily focusing tightly on any object, but and that's why the mindfulness of the body is really important, really helpful. And to use the rhythm of the breath to help to anchor attention in this present moment, in this experience, this physical experience of having a human body, having a human mind, having a human heart, and paying attention to the breath coming in, the breath going out, breathing in, just breathing in a sense of alertness, awareness, presence, relaxation, settling, finding a stable foundation within oneself of just this quality of knowing. As one's breathing out, similar, just relaxing and loosening, releasing. Because we tend, again, we tend to tighten up and clamp down. And so often we're actually trying too hard, trying to be mindful, trying to get mindfulness. But the just being present in this moment and relaxing as the breath comes in, breath goes out, just being with the body, being with the mind, being with the heart, and being willing to watch its arisings and its ceasings, its comings and its goings. It's not chasing after them, not running after them, not trying to force them to stop, but just being at the knowing, being aware, being present. And that starts to serve as a foundation for one's well-being and one's clarity. So just leave that instruction with you, and then we can sit quietly for about 20 minutes. And I don't know, maybe Roy, if you can ring a bell at the end, at
Sure.
about 20 minutes, that'd be great.
Sure. Enjoy that.
Thank you. Okay, not quite sure if that was the signal.
Yes, it's hearing so not so well, but that was the signal. So.
That was the signal. Okay, here we are. Okay, so just to yeah, transition to giving a reflection, and just beginning, well, before I begin to give the reflection, I'll just do a traditional homage to the triple jam. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So, again, just to wish everyone a warm welcome and appreciate everybody's interest. I see that there's, I'm just taking a quick look at like 57 participants. That's quite a large group of people who have shown up, so it's quite wonderful. Yeah, and I think just to again to acknowledge the fact that that's each one of you, each and every one of you are plugging into this occasion when there are any number of options. And this is the option that you've chosen. So just a big acknowledgement and appreciation for the interest. As we begin to reflect on the teachings, I think it's important to kind of recognize the purpose of the Buddha's teachings, and I think that the Buddha emphasized over and over and over again, what he taught was suffering and the ending of suffering, and that and we all experience suffering. That's the nature of the human condition. But it's also important to recognize that when we say reflecting on dukkha, I mean, it has many nuances of meaning. It's the kind of suffering is a ordinary translation, but it's just your basic stress. Discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and I think we all recognize that as part of our condition. But the Buddha is saying he doesn't teach just sort of one noble truth; he teaches four noble truths, and the being able to pay attention and learn, understand what the cause, what's the origin. What is the beginning point of this? What's its cessation? What's its ending? And what is the path? And this is the fundamentals of the Buddhist teachings. One that it's addressing this human condition, and that the Buddha was very well aware of the human propensity to create problems for itself. And it didn't have to go very far. Even in the Buddha becomes fully awakened, completely enlightened being, starts teaching, starts setting up a community of practitioners, the monastics start to train. And it doesn't take very long for them to create problems and difficulties and create strife even within the monastic community. So the human beings have a tendency to get themselves into trouble. And we have the skills, we have the opportunity, if we're willing, to learn how to be free from that. And I think that's something that We all want to be. That's what draws all of us to this teaching. Is that okay? Here's a path. Here are tools. Here are ways of practice that allow us to experience a sense of well-being and ease and peace. Just this last Saturday, I gave which was only the night before last, I gave a teaching to the community here, and emphasizing, because I think one of the things that we try to do is we try to, we do experience suffering, discontent, dissatisfaction, and we try to get rid of it, which is quite understandable, because it's unpleasant, it's unwanted, and we try to push it away somehow, or look away from it somehow, but the and we try to be peaceful. Which is exactly what the Buddha said. Okay, this is why we sit meditation. But I think it's important to recognize that there's many different approaches that we can use in terms of what the Buddha gives us a whole toolbox of approaches that we can be using. And even though I began the session with mindfulness of breathing, and which mindfulness of breathing is one of the fundamental teachings and practices that are taught, and even I teach all the time, but that there one have to we have to recognize that sometimes just sitting quietly and watching the breath is just not that easy. We have to learn how to use our minds and direct our attention in ways that help to brighten the mind, make the mind a bit more established in well-being and ease. Because it just needs it. That's what the heart, what the when I say mind, I mean mind, heart, the citta. How to, because sometimes we just want to be peaceful, and and who doesn't want it? But we also have to, there's we have to know how to lay a foundation of well-being in order to allow that sense of peacefulness and steadiness and clarity to arise from just say watching the breath and settling into the breath. And of course the Buddha gives many there's a set of teachings that he gives that are scattered throughout the discourses and the teachings that are quite important to pay attention to, and they're called anusati, they're called recollections, so that using the mind to turn attention to, bring to mind, reflect on, remind ourselves of certain qualities, in order to help the mind become more bright, more steady, and those, and so it's like rather than just trying to stop the mind or just try to cover over the mind with something else, it's sort of learning how to use the mind skillfully. We've have these minds, they're usually out of control, and how do we skillfully direct attention so that it becomes more settled and more clear. And so that the Buddha uses there's the basic tools that he uses are the recollection of the Buddha, let's say. And these are when we think of refuges in the triple jam, the Buddha, the Dhammas, the Sangha. These are our bases of recollection that we can use to turn our attention in a way that helps the mind to be brightened or to have some kind of confidence, some kind of faith, because the it's just it is there's lots of things that tend to that can grab our attention that just really are unsettling, and to consciously direct attention, use them on to th learn how to think skillfully, because oftentimes we work from an axiom. Oftentimes we work from an axiom of especially in terms of say Four Noble Truths. I think, therefore I suffer. If I didn't think, I wouldn't suffer so much. But it's usually what happens is we try to stop thinking or force our mind to stop thinking. And even if we do stop the mind, there's still this underlying tension and anxiety that's there because it's still unresolved. It's not seen clearly. But the there's the Buddha uses these anusatis to give us access to a series of conditions that he points to as fundamental to the development of the mind, development of understanding. In that they and there's various starting points and but one of them is faith, another one is wise attention, wise reflection, and another is virtue and integrity. But because of those skillful qualities or turning attention, it brings up a sense of confidence and a sense of inspiration. And with that sense of confidence or inspiration, there's a sense of well-being. And with that quality of well-being, that's a condition for a sense of joy or delight. And then feeding that, supporting that, encouraging that is a condition for tranquility, a sense of ease of body, ease of mind. And with that, as a foundation, as a condition, then there's the arising of sukha or of happiness, a sense of happiness, a sense of ease. Again, bodily ease, the happiness of heart. And then the Buddha says, with that as the condition, then the mind settles. The samadhi arises, and oftentimes translated as concentration, which I don't like as a translation. But it's everywhere. So, and there are some of the discourses where the Buddha actually stops and says, the happy mind is easily concentrated. And it's really important because, and I don't know about anybody else, but I know myself, I spent years kind of pushing away at my meditation thing. When I get my meditation, when I get my samadhi together, I'm going to be happy. And you know, it isn't as if I wouldn't have kept doing it if I didn't experience some happiness. But the you know, it wasn't until I started really sort of paying attention to what the Buddha taught and laid down that it really started to say, oh, I've got to learn how to pay attention to my happiness and well-being in order to lay a foundation for that stability of mind, that concentration, the samadhi, the settled nature of the mind. Because it's from there the Buddha says, with that settled nature, with samadhi as the condition, then there's a rising of, let's say, knowledge, clarity, knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. And it's with that knowledge and vision of things as they truly are that there is a disenchantment. And so that, and it's interesting that disenchantment is not seeded by frustration, irritation, disappointment with the world. It's based on happiness and well-being, where one knows how to really look after oneself and look after the heart, look after truth, that one is able to really sort of feel comfortable in letting go and having a dispassion toward the world, toward oneself. I mean, because it's all generated with this sense of me and my needs, me and my opinions, me and my preferences, me and my views and opinions. And it's not that we don't have them, but it's sort of, if we're not really see them clearly, understand them clearly, then they keep driving our, well, they keep driving our dukkha. So so just this sense of being able to recognize, oh, how do we look after the mind skillfully? How do we pay attention to our well-being? And then learning how to use the mind, directing our thought and thinking mind to recollection. You know, a discursive meditations are not dismissed if they are leading to well-being. So that recollection of the Buddha as a and that's the recognizing, you know, when we do the chanting and the traditional chanting. There's a say in Pali, the Iti Piso Bhagava Arahang Sammasambuddho. But and in English, you know, he is the blessed one. He's a pure one. Arahang is Arahang Sammasambuddha. Arahang is some one who in it's interesting in the Thai it's translated as one who is far from defilement, and so that it's this purity of heart that is able to not get entangled with the habitual tendencies of the deluded mind, and it's that is where our peace can be. That the Buddha was truly awakened. He was a truly awakened being, truly enlightened. He's impeccable in conduct and understanding. That sense of, because, yeah, sometimes we can see somebody or recognize somebody who's you know, deeply intelligent, really able to analyze the world and have huge amounts of facts at their fingertips. But they're not particularly nice people. Or, somebody can be impeccable in conduct, but just be incredibly uptight and worried and just a pain in the butt to everybody around them. So there's this balance of knowledge and conduct, and it's one of the beauties of say the Buddha and of really accomplished teachers. Of course, the person who I immediately think of for myself as an example of that is Ajahn Chah, and of course I'm completely biased, but I think he is to me he was somebody who had this incredible knowledge, understanding, awakening, and who was really his conduct was always impeccable, and but he was always a delight to be around. He's always an inspiring presence. So that the Buddha being having these qualities, to recollect that and to these different aspects, and we can use this our extrapolation of and sometimes it's really helpful to this is where actually you, again use learn how to use the mind, use thought, use to memorize some of these traditional teachings. They're full of pointers and guides to es the essence of the teaching. And certainly in the aspect of the refuges, because we really do, the heart, human heart, really yearns for a refuge, and we seek refuges in all sorts of belief systems and or charismatic people and all of that, and there's all sorts of different things that we take refuge in, or we take, we take refuge in our iPhones and our computers. Because where does our mind go to? Or we take, we go home, and it's a quiet space, and nobody else just happens to be there at the time. You go there. It's nice and quiet. And in terms, what do we take as refuge in that moment? Oftentimes, you turn the computer on or go to the refrigerator. There's our refuge. So it's a, what does the mind go out to seeking its well-being? And so to actually learn how to direct attention toward the things that do serve as a refuge, the Buddha as a as an awakened being. With all its various qualities, that say, and yeah, he's indeed the pure one, perfectly enlightened one, impeccable in conduct and understanding, the accomplished one, the knower of the worlds, trains perfectly those who wish to be trained, teacher of gods and humans, awake and holy. I mean, those are English translations, and there's access to all sorts of alternative translations, and it's helpful to sometimes it's really helpful to learn the Pali and what is it referring to, and just that word buddho, which is a classic meditation tool in the northeast of Thailand, and in the Thai language, it's always translated as the one who knows, or this quality of knowing, and who is awake, who's actually awake, present, alert, and who is bright. is happy, is radiant, there's a radiance there. And the word that's used is kind of like a kind of the brightness of a like a newly opened flower, the freshness of a newly opened flower, this Birkbahn. There's a so those are qualities that we that are of the Buddha, but they're also qualities that we ourselves can cultivate, we can inhabit, we can allow into our own hearts. And it's important to give knowing these and directing our attention in that way. Just the similarly with the nature of the of the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha, just they're well expounded, and that's quite really you think. Mean, I've been ordained as a Buddhist monk now for over 50 years, and I'm keep going back to the fundamental teachings of the Buddha, and I'm always amazed at how just how well he's able to articulate truth, to me it never gets boring. And there, these are they're it's apparent here now. These teachings are not hidden, or they're not. Of course, they are clouded by our delusions and our ignorance, but they're not hidden. So it's like what like one of Ajahn Chah's Dhamma books, they used a phrase that he used often actually. Everything is teaching us, because the Dhamma is always there to teach us or to learn from if we're willing to learn. It's just setting up those conditions in the heart that open the heart to that learning and understanding. The recollection, the turning attention to the Dhamma, turning attention to the Sangha, that there are these beings who have experienced the fruits of the Buddha's the Buddha's path, and that there was so. And when we say Sangha, it's not just monastic Sangha. It's specifically referring to, like in the chanting, there's this obscure phrase in English that everybody asks about, the four pairs, the eight kinds of noble beings. And but what it's referring to is the four stages of awakening: stream entry, once returner, non-returner, arahant. And both the referring to those who are on the path and those who have received the fruits of the path. So and so then it's not about say just monastic sangha or but it's about those who practice well, who practice directly, and so that everybody can do that. And as I said, I've been a monk for a long time, and I've seen a lot of terrible monks. So, but it's that's that that's not it doesn't mean that the Sangha that the Buddha is pointing to as a refuge is not available to us. That's been the beauty of the Buddha's teaching, that it's 2,600 years now, about, and it's still present. It's still relevant. It's still useful. It's still beneficial. It's still a refuge. And then this recollection again, you learning how to turn attention, recollecting one's virtue. Sometimes people don't think of you know, because oftentimes you think of all your flaws and all your failings and what you messed up on last. But you know, the just that reality of a commitment to non-harming, to being in the non-harming, not taking the life of any living creature. And there's and I would think, you know, it's just is so beautiful in the human condition when somebody is committed to that, committed to non-harming, committed to honesty and integrity, committed to a fidelity of relationships, committed to truth in speech, a commitment to clarity and refraining from intoxicants, so that the precepts are always phrased in a negative way, in the sense of I try to refrain from killing. But it's what it does is really lay a this is the foundation, this is the bottom line, this is you. And when you're committed to that, you know, what's the fruit of that? I mean, sometimes but the fruit is, of course, of loving kindness and compassion. And those are beautiful conditions, and just an empathy with the human condition. Because the reason why we say why we keep precepts is because we have a certain respect for ourselves, in the sense that, you know, I don't want to clut, but I don't want to stain my heart and my mind and my life with unskillful action, and a respect for others, in that there isn't anybody in this human condition who, say, appreciates getting killed or getting robbed or getting, having something disastrous happen to them. It's just this is fundamental, and so but to make it very conscious and realize, oh yeah, this is what I'm committed to, it brightens the heart. And so to pay attention to that. Same with generosity, a willingness to share, a willingness to give. You know, however little. And it doesn't, the word is, when the Buddhist gives the like recollection of generosity, the word is jhaga in Pali. And then how generosity manifests is in dana, in giving. And so it's the jhaga is the mental state, or the condition, or the heart base that is, hey, yeah, it's not selfish, it's not miserly, it's not self-absorbed. And then the manifestation is in giving, and it can be giving of material things, giving of attention and time, just looking after each other, a giving of advice and caring. That's a giving of truth. That's another form of dana, is Dhamma dana, the giving of Dhamma. And it doesn't have to be some sort of formal Buddhist teachings to be Dhamma dana. It's just the giving of truth. And so that these are just ways of using the mind and turning over in the mind, how to uplift and lift up the mind toward a sense of well-being and happiness. Because yeah, there's plenty of times where you sit down, you just try to watch your breath, and there's just too much turmoil. There's too much, too much, too externally and internally. But we've got our minds, And we can train them, and we can direct our attention in skillful ways. So that just giving ourselves that opportunity to benefit from our minds, learning how to train the mind and reaping the fruits of that, encourages this commitment to the path and to this training. So anyway, those are some thoughts for me this morning, for you this evening. I'll offer that, and I'm open to questions. I'll have to wrap up just before at my time, 11 o'clock, in about 20 minutes or something, because it 20 or 25 minutes, because it's the meal. It'll be the meal time, meal offering here. Hey, just wish everyone well.
Thank you, Long Paul. And so feel free if someone want to unmute himself, or if someone in the here in the Tel Aviv or in the Gilad, and if someone need a translation, I can try my best. But so
Okay. Also, I just got a. There's a couple people here. I thought it maybe one just was a lunch donor today is offered by Ariel of the Appomattox group. So I had a friend who passed away just recently, and so we will do a dedication at the meal offering to Jonathan Dominitz, just to acknowledge that. That generosity, that dana, and which is again, as I've just mentioned, jhaganusati, that recollection of generosity. It's something, it's something we can do, and it uplifts the heart. And to so also, another one of the people who's here, in the hall. Here is no is Anat, Anat Porlat, and she's known to probably many of you, and we don't want to let her go. She's been here for the since the new year. And also, before we go, I also noticed on the screen that Noah Aloni was on, so I hope that she is still on, and wishing her well, and get in touch.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you.
Oh, there, I see you. See your name. Great. Okay, yeah, delightful to see that you're there. Yeah, please get in touch.
So, your time.
Ajahn, I'd like to ask a question. If you could tell us a bit about what you do at Abayagiri and why Abayagiri? What's the value, having been a monk in many monasteries, both in the East and the West? What's the value of having a global sangha? And why not having that in Thailand?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's a great question, a big question. But the well, one of the reasons is because people don't just suffer in Thailand; they suffer everywhere. So it's good to have places that are dedicated to peace and to clarity. Anywhere in the world. And so that's and certainly the Appomattox group is, I think there's ongoing efforts and commitment to setting something up there, and just but having your group, it's important to develop your resources, and having also, I mean, one of the things with having a monastery is one is having a physical place that people can come to and experience a sense of ease or well-being, and say Wayabhaiagiri. I mean, just in terms of a name, one, it is a mountain. Giri means what it means. Literally, it means fearless mountain. And so, it definitely is a mountain. We're in a va we're in a valley here. We've got 280 acres. The front of the monastery is at about 300 meter elevation, and then the back of the monastery is at about a 800 meter elevation, so that we got slopes. And one of the challenges is finding flat spots to build anything. But what it does, it makes for a really peaceful environment. But then the word abhaya literally means fearless. But it also has that sense of security or safety. Coming into a place where one doesn't have to experience fear. And I thought that that was, in terms of when we set up the monastery, I mean, the human condition is very fear driven. So setting up a place that explicitly puts this sense of how do we work with this fear? How do we overcome this fear? And then particularly coming to America, which is a it's a fear-driven nation, as are most nations, really. So that creating a refuge, a respite within a society, within a culture. So that having a natural setting, natural environment that people can come into and feel safe is a to me is a blessing, and it's a gift to the world. Also, having a place where many people can come together and practice together to help support each other in that aspiration is to me is an important thing to be doing. Because it's we can be inspired but on our own individually, but it's hard to maintain a continuity of practice and commitment when it's just when if we're just on our own all the time. So it's just is it's hard. One of the great things of living in a monastery is that and I've been in monasteries for a long time, is that I've never seen a monastery where absolutely every single person is fed up and frustrated at the same time. and lazy and non-committed, not committed at all at the same time. Now, I haven't seen that. There's always there's all there's a framework to again to uplift the mind and up the game a bit and pay attention to that training, pay attention to that commitment to the refuges and the precepts. So that's a short answer.
Again, hope you can hear me. Really good to see you. Maybe you could say a few words about what happened, how you
No, I think
Okay.
we can. No, אני חושב שאנחנו, we cannot hear you so well. Would you like to send me the text or?
עכשיו יותר טוב או לא?
Okay, now much better.
I was wondering, first of all, thank you for coming, for talking with us, and it's great to see you. I was wondering if you could maybe say a few words about how to, I don't know, cope emotionally with everything that's happened on October 7th and since. I mean, I think everyone is in Israel is just still traumatized. I mean, this is like an ongoing event, and everybody's like so emotionally unstable here.
Right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
And
clear.
it's just like being on I don't know, like a active volcano or something. We're not even in the like post-trauma phase. We're still in the trauma phase. It's like an ongoing event, and just everybody's a wreck. Everyone I know, everyone, myself, and everyone is kind of in this like survival mode on one hand, and then just like completely numb on the other end. So maybe you could say a few things about,
Well, what I would say, I mean, just as you are doing, you all are doing by finding like-minded people to as a support and a sense of helping each other through this, because that's a it is a it's a terrible situation, and is still incredibly uncertain, and so that but again, within the uncertainty and within the gravity of the situation, there are still some fundamental perspectives to be reminding ourselves of. Is that again, it's just, as human beings, we respond to kindness, and yes, there is a lot of cruelty and in the world, and you can't sort of close your eyes to it, but you also can't let your attention be hijacked by that all the time. It's important to be directing attention to things, and things that are supportive, like refuges, like precepts, like generosity, like kindness, like the sense of being able to draw close to other people's goodness. So that fundamental goodness that we all appreciate is something that is very human, and we can pay attention. It's not that there's that you're trying to blot out the rest of it, because it's there, but what we want to be allowing the mind or encouraging the mind to be attending to and settling on is our these human, very human qualities of goodness, and knowing that okay, the world is around us is completely chaotic, and how can it be like this? I mean, on not such a dire level, but still extremely concerning. I mean, America is in a complete mess as it is, and you wonder how can people think like this? But the reality is There's this extraordinary range of human delusion and human confusion that exists, but as evidenced by this gathering, there are people who are interested and cherish peace, interested and cherish support and generosity, encouraging each other. And I think just to be able to draw close to each other in these ways, and sometimes you don't have to say anything or do anything special, but just it doesn't have to be spectacular, but just the just the presence of others who are committed to the skillful, to the wholesome, is it really uplifts the heart, and to find different ways, and of course, just as there is today, as online resources are since say COVID, the online resources have really multiplied, so that there's lots available that can be supportive, support and encouragement in these times, and like consciously directing attention to refuges, to virtues. Realize, yeah, this is my value. This is my what I see as important. A dedication of blessings. It's not empty, because it addresses something that is very universal and is has the Buddha laid down these teachings 2600 years ago, and the reason why they still are available to us today is because human beings have resonated with it and find that this is where peace truly is. This is where the heart finds a place of solace. And so but it does take that little bit of effort to draw close to like-minded people as best one can. Having Kalyana Mitta is really important. So those are a few thoughts.
Tanajan, do we have a time for another question?
Yeah, one more question.
Dan, would you?
Somebody in the Zoom or the room?
Dan, come. Yeah.
Okay.
Go.
Well, thank you, Ajahn. Can you see me or hear me? One of them at least.
If you're the one moving, yes, I can.
Yes. I've been practicing mostly mindfulness and noticing the breath, the body, etc. And I was wondering if you spoke a lot about reflection. And I was wondering if you could say a few words about the practicalities of how to practice that for someone who has not done so much of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually the crux of it, is just sort of introducing that idea that say, mindfulness is not just about how do you say, stopping the mind from thinking and just being mindful of the body, but that mindfulness also encompasses the thought processes and the directing of attention in ways that help to uplift it or encourage it, and also like unify it on a wholesome object, because oftentimes what we're trying to do, and part of it is in the problem of translation, where we okay. Where we want to concentrate the mind, And but concentrate in the English language. Anyway, I don't know how they translate it into Israeli, into Hebrew, but the connotation is like a, I mean, literally to concentrate something is to make it small. And so you want to make the mind small, right? And but which is really not, you want to make the mind, you want to make the heart bigger, more spacious. And to and in order to do that, we have to pay attention to the quality of the mind, because sometimes that sense of trying to concentrate or focus or one point the mind is a pushing away, and a, there's a tenseness that's there that's not very settling. Ajahn Sumedho has a really good way of expressing this sense of developing the when we talk about one-pointedness, there's different kinds of points. So he said, like, there's a point that excludes and there's a point that includes. So that point of exclusion is trying to push away. Okay, I got to push away this feeling, I got to push away this thought. But when you think of a point that includes, it's a broader point that allows, in awareness, in mindfulness, in we're still being attentive, but it gives space for it, because it's, thoughts come and go anyway. And so that learning how to hold that space so that the thoughts and the feelings and the emotions can come and go, because oftentimes what they come and then they take up residence, and just learning how to holding that space, holding that point that includes. And again, it's where one is, there's a fearless quality that allows even the uncomfortable, and recognizing that even that will cease. That will has an end. It's not, this is not a permanent condition. And what can be recognized is then the presence behind that, the knowing behind that. This is the buddho, this is the knowing behind that. Okay. So usually you close with a chant of some sort.
Yes, usually we do some chant, or we have some recordings, because in the Zoom it's a bit problematic to do
Yeah.
together. We hear recording together, so.
Yes. I was wondering how are you going to do it.
Should we do a chant, or?
Yes. Yes. I'm a proponent of people learning the chanting, learning more chanting. It's a really helpful tool. I can remember one time, early days, when my mother came to the monastery and we were chanting. She joined the evening pujas. She never showed up for morning pujas, but and she had, we would sometimes we chant in English, sometimes we chant in Pali, and after some time she said, "I really like the Pali chanting," which was really surprising to me. But it's also having that as a foundation. There's a rhythm to it that's very soothing, and then there's key terms that are really useful to for reflection and investigation. Anyway, that's my plug for chanting.
Thank you, Ajahn. So maybe we will finish with verses of sharing of merit. We will share a screen. Someone who have the chanting book, it's on page 28. We have the Wat Pananachat chanting book, but I will share the screen and the recording, which can be improved, but well, good enough for this time.
Andamayam sabbapatidanagatayo bhannamase punyasidani katasayananyani katani me te sancha bhagino hontu satananta pamanaka May whatever living beings, without measure, without end, partake of all the merit from the good deeds I have done. Yehi yagunavanta chamayam mata pita tayo. Dita me cha paya dita va anye ma jata verino. Those loved and full of goodness, my mother and my father dear, be seen by me and those unseen, those neutral and averse. Satati tanti loka saminte umma chatu yonika Anche ka chatu vokara samsaranta bhava bhave Beings established in the world From the three planes and four grounds of birth With five aggregates of 104 Wandering on from realm to realm Yatam ye patidanam me Anumodantu te sayam Ye chimam na pratananti devate samnivedayum Those who know my act of dedication May they all rejoice in it And as for those yet unaware, may the devas let them know. Maya dinana punyanam anumodana hetuna. Sale sata sada hontu avera sukajivino. Kema padam cha pahontu te sasa si jatam supa. By rejoicing in my sharing, may all beings live at ease. In freedom from hostility, may their good wishes be fulfilled, and may they all reach safety.
Okay, so I'll close now and wish you all well. It's been a great opportunity to join you, and yeah, all the best wishes from the Sangha here.
Thank you.
Okay, bye bye.
Thank you very much.
Good job.